Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. As part of our ongoing series of POTUS 47 conversations, very timely today in consideration of the geopolitical developments we've witnessed in the past 24 hours. Joining us here today in studio, glad to welcome back from the UBS Chief Investment Office, Head of Fixed Income for the Americas, Kurt Ryman. Joining us on the line from Washington, glad to welcome back Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor with Governmental Affairs U.S. Kurt, Shane, thank you very much for dropping by this morning. Very timely that you're doing so. Shane, I know we've witnessed some interesting developments with respect to an announced ceasefire in the past 24 hours. Can you talk a bit in terms of how we got to where we are this morning, how that all came together, your confidence in that ceasefire holding over the next two-week span, and what we could expect to perhaps see over these next 2 weeks?
Thanks, Dan. You know, as we've seen the past few weeks, you know, there have been negotiations going on, not directly, but via Pakistan. And the Pakistan president has done a great job here of trying to, you know, reach an agreement. I think over those past few weeks, you know, you saw increased pressure on both sides to kind of position themselves for a ceasefire and the upcoming negotiations, right? You know, the U.S. kept, and Israel kept hammering away at military sites and production lines for military equipment. And at the same time, you saw Iran really clamp down on the Strait of Hormuz, which economic pressure on not just the U.S., but the entire global economy. I think both sides use this to position for this ceasefire and head into a two-week negotiating period. And so, you know, we've seen some reports even since the start of the ceasefire that Iran has still had some military attacks on the UAE and Qatar, but I think those will probably subside in the next day or two. And, you know, these 2 weeks will be critical for negotiations. I think you're seeing the U.S. position themselves to even ensure that the any uranium in Iran is no longer in Iran's hands. The U.S. has said that they reserve the military right to go get that uranium. My guess is that during negotiations, Iran would agree to have some other country take possession of uranium. So, you know, I think that this is absolutely headed in the right direction, but it's going to be a tough 2 weeks, and I think you will see tough talk by both sides. And so while tensions are high, you'll hear some rhetoric that makes it a little higher. But I think we've seen really interestingly is that Iran may realize that their power is not in developing nuclear weapons, but in their control of the Hormuz Strait. So I think they're going to try and have negotiations recognize their power being over the Straits of Hormuz, which I'm not sure President Trump will agree to. So that's going to be an interesting area to keep an eye on.
In terms of the market implications, we've seen a notable reaction in the U.S. equity futures. Markets are opening as we speak at the moment. But what are your thoughts on the market response we've seen? And just mindful that over the next 2 weeks, a lot could happen. We've seen a lot of knee-jerk response in the markets. How best for investors to navigate what is a very uncertain and volatile period? And what guidance can you offer in terms of positioning at this moment?
Let's start with our longstanding advice throughout this, which is you can't time geopolitical events and to stay fully invested in markets. This is the time-tested truth about geopolitics is that, you know, you do risk losing out if you try to time it by just not being invested on days like today when there's a big move on potentially positive outcomes. So we've been recommending instead taking an approach that's giving diversification to the portfolio, maybe added diversification because we've had strong years. We're just off, you know, double digit returns on stocks for 3 years in a row and decent returns for bonds, but trailing stocks. So your 60-40 portfolio a few years ago might look closer to a 70-30. So we've been stressing diversification. I still think that holds today. You know, you might have some opportunities here now that there's been a drop in crude prices, say, for example, to build in some commodities exposure. That's one thing we could be thinking about. Also thinking about the opportunities in fixed income. Leslie Falconio moved U.S. Treasuries to attractive. They have a yield this time when a few years ago, when we were looking at a geopolitical conflict in Ukraine, 10-year note yields all across the curve, in fact, were lower. So you have a yield that you can build in the portfolio. we've also been recommending adding hedges into the mix and in order to provide some cushion. Maybe if volatility were to ease off a bit here, this would be an opportunity for investors to reconsider. We should have, at least a kind of eyes wide open, maybe even a tentative approach to the ceasefire, because that is what it is. It's a ceasefire. It's not an end of hostilities outright. We can say that some of the worst case scenarios may be, we know what they are because the risk of an escalation brought both sides to a ceasefire. So that's important information. If oil prices don't go to $150 a barrel, that takes away some of those tail risks, which I think that's helpful. And if oil prices move lower, and everything's a beta to oil right now, so that's why I keep bringing it up. But if oil prices move lower and they stay lower, albeit elevated relative to where they were before the war, that may remove the risk of the Fed and other central banks having to raise interest rates. So that's, I think, also maybe part of the mix, and we should be considering, especially relative to our view that later this year, we think the Fed's cutting rates, not raising them. So, you know, I these are some of the thoughts that I think these time-tested, truisms or you know, ways that we manage money, stay invested, don't go to worst-case scenarios, but build in diversification. I think that's still the message that we're sharing with clients, and we think will help manage through this.
Kurt and Shane, thank you for the insight and guidance with respect to these geopolitical developments. Again, I want to point our listeners to ubs.com/CIO, where they can locate the latest CIO alert, which covers these latest developments and speaks a bit to what investors should do, how they should respond, and outlines the position and guidance from CIO. We'll point out as well from our partners at Governmental Affairs, ubs.com/Washington Weekly. So before we close out, I know up on the POTUS 47 site, ubs.com/POTUS47. Kurt, you've recently written about the midterm elections. They may seem far away, though they will be here before we know it, at this point several months away. The outcome does have notable implications to the second half of President Trump's second term. So, Shane, can you speak a bit, as of today, what polls are pointing to?
Yeah, thanks, Dan. You know, I think one of the most interesting polls to keep an eye on is actual votes. And yesterday that happened. In the state of Georgia, there was a special election for former Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene's seat. And then in Wisconsin, you have an election for the state's Supreme Court. And, you know, in Georgia, we expected the Republican to win, and he did win and prevailed. However, it's pretty notable that his margin of victory was much smaller than previous elections in this district before. This is a district that President Trump won by about 40 points. And yesterday's election, the Republican prevailed with less than half of that margin. So that shows enthusiasm for the Democrat base. Pair that with the Supreme Court victory for Democrats in Wisconsin, and you know, Democrats are celebrating. They're trying to demonstrate that they have the most to win the November elections. And I think most prognosticators of elections will tell you that Democrats are poised to win the House back. And you know, yesterday's elections kind of continue that theme. I think the Senate is still a question mark as the landscape is a little more favorable for Republicans, but this trend has now put the Senate in play. You know, 6 months ago, I probably would have said that Republicans will hold the Senate. Now I think it's wise to look at it as there's a possibility Democrats not only take the House, but they also take the Senate. So interesting developments, and you know, I think the enthusiasm gap is really starting to make Republicans nervous. But you know, hey, this is there's more than 6 months till the election, so you know it's not over for Republicans, and we'll see how you know the spring and summer play out.
So with that, Kurt, as Shane pointed out, 6 months plus to go could be a variety of outcome scenarios. I know markets, as we just spoke about, preoccupied with these geopolitical developments, but any market implications to speak of at the moment, given what polls are pointing to and these latest results Shane outlined for us?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to reflect on Shane's comments about the Senate, where the probability of the Democrats taking the Senate has risen. And it's risen ever since the war began and oil prices rose and gas prices rose. And so that, I think, matters, especially when it comes to the ceasefire. How quickly are ships going to be able to move through the Strait of Hormuz? Will ships return to the Strait? There's been damaged infrastructure, and that'll mean it's going to take months, maybe years, to rebuild some of the LNG facilities in Qatar and the oil pipeline infrastructure. So it's not clear that we're going to see an immediate decline in gas prices to the levels that prevailed before the war. And that matters. That matters to at least how Americans are thinking about the direction of the country and the success of this administration. So we have to think that even though the midterms are approaching, and that could be one of the reasons for an off-ramp, you know, declaring victory credibly, for example, also to Shane's comments on the enriched uranium and getting the access to that. Can we reopen? Can the U.S. credibly reopen or see that the Strait of Hormuz has been reopened and access the uranium? That's going to matter in how this war ends and what the public perception is about it. Now, from a market perspective, I think that, you know, the ceasefire, the decline in oil prices, if that persists, you know, take some away some of the tail risks around the impact on the U.S. economy and even the global economy. I would argue that divided government in D.C. would likely limit the ability of fiscal policy, which is right now a big driver of the economy because of the return of tax refunds. We're almost at April 15th, you know, so people are going to be getting their tax refunds, and that supports consumer spending. But the odds of getting additional fiscal stimulus go down if you have a different party controlling Congress relative to the White House. And in any case, with deficits that are in the range of 6 to 7% of GDP, there's not a whole lot of room for additional fiscal stimulus. And then just broader legislation becomes more difficult. It may be more ruling by regulatory frameworks and executive orders, as we've already seen in the first year plus of this administration, maybe something that is more the driving force in the second half of the administration.
Well, with the clock winding down, it will be interesting to see what legislative developments come out of Washington in the months ahead. And I do want to point out to that note to our listeners, we look forward to these POTUS 47 conversations here on Top of the Morning with Kurt and Shane on a monthly basis. So we'll definitely have some follow-up conversations around that. Though, Kurt, Shane, thank you both for dropping by. Very timely update given what's been going on overseas. We'll continue to keep our listeners, our clients informed along the way. Though, thank you again for dropping by Top of the Morning for this morning's conversation.
It's great to be with you, Dan and Shane. Thanks.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG, member FINRA SIPC.